This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
Yeah, baby, here we go. It's hour number five of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Woolchuck and Schiafalo will bring TD Tuesday to your ears here coming up in about 20 minutes. But joining us now from DraftKings, it's our friend Mike Golic Jr. here on your home of the Cowboys. How you doing, sir?
Doing well. How you doing?
Doing wonderful. You know, trying to figure out how good the Cowboys are with back-to-back wins. Of course, it's been the Giants and Steelers. Would you buy into it a little bit that progress is happening, or is this just a quality of opponent situation?
You know what? I go back and forth on it because you're right. Quality opponent. Listen, certainly the Steelers defense and going up against the wrecking ball that is TJ Watt and surviving and living to tell the tale, that's something anyone should be proud of. And I think the way the Cowboys did it to me was indicative of some progress, right? You've got injuries to two of your most important players defensively that you overcame. Offensively, your offensive line was compromised in a game against said TJ Watt. You were able to overcome that and make the plays necessary. It's still a team that talent-wise feels like it has a ceiling, but I do think they deserve credit for the way they went out there and battled and the way that Dak Prescott has found a way to overcome some mistakes of his own to still lead for a winning effort with this team.
As an O-lineman yourself, Mike, where do you come out on if you're trying to get a running game going? How much can a running back, you know, make it happen for you? And how much do you just need a quality offensive line open in holes for him?
Yeah, I think it can go both ways because, like, a quality running back in terms of how they set up blocks, the way that they draw defenders' eyes in can help make life easier for you. I always call it, like, you can watch a running back put a defender on an offensive lineman. It's part of understanding the design of each play. Hey, this is where the running back's aiming point is on a given play, and how he can get a defender to commit up into the line of scrimmage can sometimes make it easier for me to get where I'm going. If he goes up inside on a play that's eventually designed to go outside, well, now all of a sudden the linebacker that I would have to tear ass to have to if I'm an offensive lineman becomes a little bit easier. He's coming downhill, and so a good running back can absolutely help that stuff. A good scheme where, hey, if you've got guys motioning across like we see in so many offenses in the NFL, if we've got, you know, tight ends in certain spots, the way that we decide to go and orient the formations, all that can help. But at the end of the day, you're in the people moving business. And one of the biggest and most important factors in the people moving business is continuity and communication. And that was the thing that I think if you're the Cowboys and your fan base, you can be as encouraged by as anything is you had a couple of guys in different spots because of the injury at left tackle to Tyler Guyton, and you were still able to go out there and communicate your way through things. Zach Martin goes down for a series or so, and you're able to communicate your way through things, and you get a decent day out of your running back room. And so all of those things, I think, are positive signs, even amidst a season where we know the Cowboys are heavily scrutinized in this area.
You talk about moving people there. We see Robert Saleh getting moved out of New York today. He's being escorted out by security. How do you imagine that goes down? Is that a guy on his right, a guy on his left? Do they have him by the arm? Do they Uncle Phil him out of the facility? Being escorted out seems like something that doesn't usually happen.
I got to imagine it's one of those situations where it's a guy on the right or left, and then one of them maybe went for a grab, and Robert Saleh said, I can do it myself, and walked out of there with strides of pride in that building. In one of the most bizarre situations of all time. You know what? I'm so mad at myself for ever believing that any amount of quarterback production or cachet at that position was going to help the Jets not be the Jets anymore. This organization just constantly failing to get out of its own way. And it starts, of course, with Woody Johnson, who made this decision today.
Amen. Jets are always going to jet. Now, Gojo, I got to go to Pittsburgh and enjoy the Cowboys game as a fan. This city was unbelievable. I mean, to me, that sports downtown, it's hard to beat. In your travels, do you have a favorite sports city that you've been to?
Sorry, you broke up for a second right as you asked the question.
Do you have a favorite sports city that you've been to?
Who, you know what? Pittsburgh is one I'm pretty partial to. I got to go to rookie training camp in 2013 in Pittsburgh, and so I lived out there during the offseason for a bit. And I do remember getting there during the NHL playoff and during the Stanley Cup playoffs in the spring, And when the Penguins got eliminated, you could hear a mouse fart in that town because everyone lives and dies so hard with it. Going across the bridge and seeing the views into PNC Park when the Pirates were playing was electric. But I got to say, one I've been to most recently in the pro ranks that I really appreciate is what Kansas City's done in creating an atmosphere around there that is collegiate in nature. Like, that stadium is a little bit on the older side, but seeing people camped out in cars, I was there for the opening night game this year against the Baltimore Ravens, and seeing people camped out on the highway for a mile with their grills out, waiting for the tailgate lots to open all day in the lead up to that night game for a team that's already accomplished as much as they have, it is a really unique atmosphere, and it smells good, which is usually going to win me over.
Hey, Mike, the really wild college football season that we had last week is, are you thinking more of this, or was that just kind of, a once off for this season?
I think we're going to have to, kind of like in the NFL, the way that, you guys know, since 2011, when we started to change up a lot of the business of football on that CBA, we've seen the preseason get these playing weird football at the beginning of years because that haven't yet had a chance to test out a lot of the new parts or figure out all the nooks and crannies of a team that, even with a lot of similar faces, is different every year. In college football, because you've got rampant free agency every year instead of just every few years,
right,
now you're getting wholesale roster turnover that all these teams don't have any preseason games to work with. And as a result, I think you're getting teams at the Power Four level now going out and spending and trying to get quality players in there, but then having to spend the beginning of the season tinkering. And while you've got that, you've got teams at the lower levels of the sport that don't have the luxury of bringing in a whole bunch of new talent every year. And while they might lose one or two guys, they're far more likely to have rosters intact that can go out and use that continuity to their benefit early in the year and sneak up on some of these more talented teams, maybe more frequently than we've seen in the past because of it.
Mike Golic Jr. here with you. What's your outlook on Bama like for the next 2 to 4 years?
I think Bama has shown it's still capable of winning games at a really high level. I mean, they own probably the best win and the worst loss in the span of 2 weeks in the sport this year. I think ultimately I take a long view approach. Kalen DeBoer knows how to coach. Now, it's different than the way Nick did it, and that's tough to sell to the locals, especially when you abandon some of the trust by losing to a team like Vanderbilt early on. That's a no-no. Trust is gained in drops and lost in buckets, and unfortunately, Kalen kicked over the bucket. That being said, I still think they're a program that, because of the eyes, the resources, all the money coming in there, are going to have every chance and opportunity to continue the talent pipeline that Nick has made there. I mean, Jalen Milroe is still going to be a case study for, hey, if you're a quarterback and you want to come and get developed by a guy like Kalen DeBoer, be a potential Heisman Trophy winner, be a potential top draft pick, that's enticing to a lot of guys, even in this day and age where, yeah, they've got the money too, but having the pro prospects that go along with a place like Bama still helps a lot. So I think they're going to continue to be one of the top programs in the sport, but that stranglehold on the number one spot, that was gone for the last few years of Nick Saban's tenure, and so it's certainly gone now that Kalen DeBoer's in town, and they're figuring out how to do things a bit of a different way in Tuscaloosa.
What do you think about this Texas-Oklahoma matchup? Where does that rank for you in terms of college football rivalries? And can we get you here to the State Fair? I want to see you go ahead and do food reviews on all these delicious foods we've got.
Man, I tell you what, I was fortunate enough to get down to the State Fair one time when I was back at ESPN when we were doing Golic and Wingo and went down there to do some shows. And it is an experience I cherish so much. I would love nothing more than to get back down there very, very soon. Deep frying everything is my love language. When I had deep fried cola down there, I knew that I had come home to a place that I had never actually lived. So it's high up on the rivalry because you have all the pageantry. That's what college football is all about, to have that kind of attachment to the programs that has now followed them from one conference to another. And in a world where college football has had so much change, this feels like a great anchor point for the sport. So I'm very excited for this one. I have worries about Oklahoma's ability to keep up with a team in Texas that I think seems like it's primed to get Quinn Ewers back. And for all the hype about Arch Manning and what he's been able to do at the helm of that team, it's still a big difference in Quinn Ewers, the benefit of the experience that he's gained there in the last couple of years. And I think with him at the helm, they're the unquestioned best team in college football right now.
What's the experience like as a player at that age getting set for one of these big rivalries like for you, Michigan or USC or something? How's that game day experience different?
I think it's really the week lead up that feels a lot different. Like, we all like to say, hey, we go out there and prepare the same for everybody, especially with the 18 to 22-year-olds. I've been a part of a lot of weeks where, hey, we lost games to teams we shouldn't have because it's a natural belief to kind of relax when you see a helmet sticker that's not quite the same cachet as some of the ones you mentioned. So Rivalry Week, it's late nights there with your whole unit watching tape, trying to find any advantage that you can possibly get. And when you get to that atmosphere, you know, I always enjoyed the coaches that I had that said, hey, you work the entire year for these few fall Saturdays, but especially for these ones. Take in the atmosphere. Embrace that. If you're on the road in a hostile environment, embrace that. Hey, I always liked that feeling like you were Leonidas in the 300 in the middle of this place that hated you and wanted to see you fail, getting the chance to go out there and shut them up. And so I relished those moments to go in and silence an opposing crowd, to hear the roar of a stadium collapse under the weight of what we're doing on the field. There's nothing like it. I'll spend the rest of my life chasing the kind of high that you get, you know, like we did in 2012, going on the road down in Norma and beating a Bob Stoops-led team that didn't do much losing at home pretty emphatically in front of a sold-out stadium that had College game day in town. There's not much like it.
What are you looking at here? Ohio State and Oregon, obviously now a Big Ten matchup. It's in Oregon, 2-3. How do you see it?
Man, let me tell you what. First off, you talk about great environments in college football. Autzen is one of those places. If you got a chance to get a game, the Pacific Northwest is beautiful during the fall, and those fans get that place rocking. So Ohio State, they're going to feel it. Remember, they've been looking great through the early portion of the season. They have not faced a team as talented or an environment as hostile as the one they're getting ready to walk into this weekend. That being said, the biggest difference between the way I saw this matchup going before the season, I picked Oregon to win the Big Ten before the season. I think they'd both make the playoff, but I thought Oregon, in the way they had built up along the trenches for the last few years, from Mario Cristobal through now Dan Lanning, were going to be in a better position at that spot to go along with a quarterback who I thought in Dylan Gabriel, a little more talented, a little more seasoned than Will Howard already. The thing I didn't account for was Ohio State's offensive line with Chip Kelly there pulling the strings in the run game. Finally looks like the groups that used to be there, at least in the early going, that were there under Urban Meyer, where Ohio State moved people for a living back then. That was how they got to the promised land. And during this most recent era of the team, they had kind of gotten away from that. They had gotten, I won't say soft in the middle because that's a trigger word for a lot of people, but the foundation of that team had been compromised a bit on the offensive line, and they're back to doing business up front there to go along with all those great skill guys. So I think Ohio State goes in on the road and gets it done and gets one of the marquee wins of the early season.
Mike Golic Jr., DraftKings, thank you so much for your time, sir, and enjoy the games, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, fellas.
There he goes. And I appreciate him. It's always good to catch up with him. We usually see him at the Super Bowl, and if you check out DraftKings, it's not just a daily fantasy outlet. They have their own talk network and everything going on. Okay, yes, a lot going on here in the world of sports today. The big story was the Jets moving on from Robert Saleh and all of the angles inside of that story. How much, you know, does Aaron Rodgers have to do with it? Again, Woody Johnson, the Jets owner, saying today that decision was mine and mine alone. The Patriots are going to start the rookie quarterback Drake May against Houston. And USC's Juju Watkins got a big old deal from Nike there, multi-million dollars there, which is just insanely great for her. And she's quite a talent, you know, but really not even that established on the national sports scene. To get that kind of a bag, I definitely think, you know, it's a testament not only to her talent, but how far the women's game has grown in a short period of time. Okay, how about we hit you with three things to know about Cowboys-Lions here before we get to this TD Tuesday shock-a-lock from the morning news. Dan Campbell making his return to town, played his college ball at A&M. He's down there in the from the Glen Rose area.
Yeah.
Did you work with Dan Campbell, Brian?
I never did work with Dan Campbell, no.
And the, of course, highly anticipated rematch from last year's game. I think that's a significant one. Not only are you facing the Detroit Lions and all their great skill players, the ascent of Jameson Williams, wide receiver, he is now their leading player. So you have him and Amon-Ra St. Brown and two incredible running backs and two incredible pass rushers. Yeah. You know, so this team is freaking loaded, and they're inspired. You know what it's like? You can't fabricate that kind of energy. Like maybe a Michael Jordan could by telling himself fairy tales about what the other guy said, and he worked himself into like this delusional place. But here with the Detroit Lions, I feel like that sort of emotional edge needing to prove themselves, this game is, you know, just way too big to hope for the opponent overlooking you.
Yeah,
you know, maybe next time.
That's the perfect recipe to be a talented team with a chip on your shoulder.
Yeah,
and now that's exactly what this football team is and all that stuff. And Laporta hasn't even been quite himself, but he's probably going to be a little bit more healed up because I know he'd been hobbling a little bit, but that's another dude who can really dominate your defense as well.
KNC Masterpiece is going to be at Buffalo Wild Wings on Friday in Louisville. That'll be your next chance to pick up the Whataburger G-Bag Nation flag. I love Coach Prime. He was asked if Travis Hunter is a better athlete than he was. He said, "It's not me against Travis. I've had my turn." I don't know how you could say anybody was a better football player than what Deion Sanders put out there. That was incredible. But like raw athleticism, Travis Hunter's got the size, the strength as well on top of it, right? Like a lot of sports jobs, I think Travis Hunter would just beast mode him.
From that era, you know, you had the Bo Jacksons and then the Herschel Walkers and people like that. Those were guys I was, you know, when I was in school, very familiar with because of, especially with the you know, being in the Southeastern Conference, but what you saw at Florida State, you know, it some just rare athletic ability with those guys. Hunter's, I mean, I've just seen TV copy of him.
He could be very special.
I'm interested to see his, when you sit down and start studying all his tape and being able to run it back and see the route running ability, the separation, the hands obviously are big time. You know, tight window throws for that guy. He makes plays. Maybe he's a bad ball catcher too. There's a lot to like about his game, but it's going to be a really, really fascinating study where scouts view him. Are they going to view him as a receiver? Or are they going to view him as a corner?
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't paid as much attention to him as I did Deion's career, but like the returns, like Deion had a quickness and a suddenness and ability to change direction that
he changed games.
Well, the speed isn't the same.
Yeah. Was Deion as much of a full-time two-way player in college as Hunter is?
Not to that level.
Okay.
Not to that level.
But he also played baseball at a big league level.
No, he did.
He's
played both in a day. He like played in a Falcons game and then go playing
playoff
a night game
with the Braves.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're talking about the raw talent of it, it's an honor to be mentioned. But I think he took the pass on that because he didn't want to dunk all over it.
Yeah, you can't say like, "Yes, I'm better than my player."
Yeah, I'm better than everybody. No,
let's see how Travis Hunter does in the NFL. Then we can like maybe have that conversation.
Deion used to call his punt returns.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out there and return it this time right here. And he does it.
Yeah, Deion was
crazy.
Who could do that?
Because he could get himself in these impossible positions in between defenders and somehow explode out the other side while pulling away from everybody after slowing down. You know, like Deion had a Barry Sanders component to his athleticism that I think is just so incredibly rare.